You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of September 24th, 2014, and it's time to get in the driver's seat because we're taking a joyride into the history of racing things.
This intro just keeps rolling. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Albor.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It's a serious but not humorless discussion about video games. We're also known as the Car Guys.
We are the Car Guys. We're super into vehicles.
Take that, click and clack.
Anything with two axles and an engine. Brrr.
We killed them and took over their mantle. That's how that works. They're like click and clack. The Clapper Brothers are they're the Highlander.
Yeah.
We'll take all of your vehicle questions now.
Is this an in-joke that, like, here's an honest thing about me, listeners, that you may not know.
Is public radio an in-joke?
This car thing.
Like car talk?
I guess I don't really understand the car bit.
Okay, have you ever listened to that? We'll talk about video games in a second, but, like, have you ever listened to the NPR show? They still play it in reruns where it's two brothers from, I think they're from Boston.
And my brother, and me?
No. This is just my brother.
Okay.
They do like a car call-in show where people call in for
advice. Oh, I've heard about that. Yeah. Because people have very specific advice regarding their cars.
And they also, like, they say, okay, what kind of noise does it make? And people try to simulate the noise and stuff. And they'll give... It's basically like Loveline for cars.
Interesting.
Loveline
for cars. Yeah, so there are crabs in my hood of my
Oh, there's
engine.
A topical ointment for that. And they recently retired, maybe last year or something like that. But there's still, I mean,
their spirit lives on.
It was an NPR show. There's probably decades worth of, like, shows that they've done. Okay, it's kind of like, you know, the Garrison Keillor model of, like, you're on NPR forever.
And did they retire because cars are done?
Electric cars are just going to destroy everything.
Well, they're just very old.
Yeah, I mean, okay. They were pretty old. They had been doing it for many years.
Okay.
Also, they were probably tired.
They were giving, like, questions on horses and carriages back in the day?
Buggies. Yes. all of this is to say that we're going to talk a little bit about cars today, because we happened upon an article called Preserving History in Gran Turismo. It's by Corey Milne, and he wrote an article about...
Play the Past.
Yeah, Play the Past. PlaytheFast.org. We both like that website quite a bit. You should visit it. He wrote an article, Gran Turismo was the main example, and we'll kind of branch off that after a minute, but about how video games can be part of historical preservation.
Yes.
And the reason he picked Gran Turismo is because, you know, Gran Turismo has an obsessive eye for detail.
Oh, yeah.
Like, those cars are ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's known for that, right?
Yeah.
People who are into the Gran Turismo series... Yeah. Pick that game over so many others, specifically because of its fidelity to real-world vehicles.
Fidelity in, like, the truest sense. Like, it is faithful to the cars.
Now I should say, just to be perfectly clear, I know basically nothing about cars.
Uh-huh.
Like, I think I would have a hard time distinguishing a Jaguar from an actual real-world Jaguar. Like, I really don't really...
Where's the pedals in this thing?
I also don't know much about large cats, so there's that. I don't have my license, so I don't really drive. Legally.
On public roads. Yeah, I mean, on our private estate that we own.
I've ridden some ATVs.
Easily, yeah, I mean...
I ride the waves. We're in California. I surf to school.
Anyway, the point is that I think... Well, actually, we should talk about his article a little bit first, because he's kind of... me specifically, and you to a lesser extent, is... He's a liberal arts kid that got a degree in history, so like any good liberal arts kid, he spends about 3/4 of the paper getting to his point. And I say this with love,
because I
do this pretty much every week at Pop Matters, talking just a little bit about, like, the history and the context of the automobile and how things have been changing and why Gran Turismo might be a nice way to be a kind of a record of something that has changed a lot.
Yeah.
So just talking about cars in general, like about the... the article itself. What do you think about the entire argument about like the change of cars and like how that relates to what you'd find in Gran Turismo?
Yeah, I think it's fascinating because, like I said, I don't really drive cars. I've never really understood the sort of appeal to it. And one of my coworkers, he actually does his own gaming podcast. Mm. If I remembered what it was called,
we'll plug it
in the show notes. His name is Michael Grimm. Listeners probably are familiar with it, his podcast already, but he loves cars. Mm. And I've talked to him about it before, like, oh, his thoughts on, you know, electric cars and other types of cars like that. And the way that he describes it is the way that I think anybody who loves the design of something describes it. And that is, like, it's just a beautiful thing. Yeah. Like, the engine, the combustion engine is a masterpiece of design. Like, it's just a beautiful thing that takes something that can basically explode and puts it into something that is...
I mean, it does explode.
It does explode, what it's doing. Right. Yeah, like... that, and can put it into a complex device that can not just create exhilarating experiences, the act of driving those cars, but, you know, is sort of transcends that, right? Like, there's such this... When I hear people who love cars talk about cars, I get this sense of... like admiration and awe in the truest sense of that word, right? Like it's something to be marveled at. And the idea that that's changing with the incoming of driverless cars from the folks who brought you Google Glass, you know, cars that do not run with a combustion engine at all, that run on batteries, which I think I would argue are still beautiful pieces of design.
Yeah, it's just
different. Just a different type of design. Mm-hmm. I could see how people have a certain... nostalgia for cars even that were built only a few years ago. You know, there are people who love the Honda Accord. I don't know, maybe I'm totally making that up, but you know, who knows?
Are you saying that my 2006 Toyota Corolla is going to be a classic?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Don't sell that pretty boy.
Yeah.
There's a certain fascination in the way that things are created or produced, and this is true of anything that mankind has made, that as it's moving on, we want to preserve, and that desire to preserve it, if for no other reason, to look back and say, hey, this was important, this was something I loved once, and it's okay that it's gone now, but I want to capture that. I think that's totally admirable, even if it is one of the primary causes of climate change in this day and age, or something like that, right? Who knows?
Even though they are just kill machines, well, I mean, death machines on wheels.
I don't drive a car, so I'm totally biased, but I celebrate the future of driverless cars, right? I mean, the human error is one of the primary causes. So by all means.
Unless, like, lightning strikes a tree and the tree falls on you, like, the reason why people get injured in cars is because of human error.
Yeah. Well, so what were you driving during a thunderstorm? Come on.
I mean, you're running away from the twister.
Oh, okay.
I think that was, and it also hit me, this article hit me in that respect, where it's not like cars are something that we will see change radically in our lifetime, whereas we didn't see the transition from the horse-drawn carriage to the car. Like, someone who was born in the 1880s lived well into the advent of the automobile.
Right.
And so they were able to see a world pre-automobile and post-automobile.
Yeah, but to just jump into it then, a lot of what cars are today aren't what they were when they were first created anyway, though, right? Like, cars have been changing since their invention.
Well, I mean are we talking about mechanically, or are we talking about...
Well, I mean,
about
anything.
Like...
Yeah, sure. Mechanically speaking, a little bit, right? Like, power steering. Power steering is a relatively new thing for cars for a while.
I mean, I guess since the 70s.
Sure. I mean, like, sure, since the 70s, but cars...
So we're talking about, like, 40 years.
Yeah, 40 years. Or, like, the seatbelt, right? Like,
But that was a legal thing.
Yeah, that's a legal thing, but that's fundamentally changed how we drive. Like, when was the last time you sat in a bucket seat, Scott?
I mean, I think the other reason why I wanted to pick this article is because it plays into our recent discussion about simulations.
Yes, absolutely.
But I think, like, at the broad strokes are, like, we are now getting to the point where video games can be somewhat record keepers of things that no longer exist that we still remember existing.
Yes.
Whereas, like, we can play Red Dead and think about, like, having a horse-drawn carriage or something, but we never truly experienced that. That wasn't something that was within the lifespan of the art form.
Right.
And so Gran Turismo is one of those special cases where it can be simulating a system or an object that was... that existed alongside the existence of video games, yet video games have now lived past mm-hmm. its popular conception.
Yeah.
I mean, this is all very, like, theoretical. We're still going to have... We're going to have gas-powered engines for a really long time. But, absolutely. I mean, like, it's still, like... The point is that we're reaching an inflection point where that's going to stop being the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And something like Gran Turismo will be more... Could have the potential to be more of a museum piece.
Yeah, the idea of the museum piece, I think, is especially interesting. Because what we're suggesting is... You know, you'll come to the museum with your little kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's name him Jimmy.
Uh-huh. Hey, Jimmy.
Hey. Hey, Dad. Mm-hmm. Jimmy, you should come to the museum and check out this car exhibit. What's a car,
yeah,
Dad?
Exactly.
You know, and then you show your son, oh, this is a thing that I used to drive really fast.
Mm-hmm.
This is how I met your mom, you know?
Jimmy, this may be how well, Jimmy, I shouldn't talk about your conception.
Yeah. So the point being is, like, this is a future that we're imagining where people have this desire to go see it. Right now, you could just go drive a car, you know? But I think part of the allure is being able to participate in something that you never experienced, period. Like, this isn't just for people who are nostalgic about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is for people who will never know why you would even have that nostalgia.
Yeah.
And it's true already, to some extent, right?
Yeah.
People play Gran Turismo so they can drive cars that they could never afford.
Yeah.
Like, if you want to drive a Le Mans...
I was just in Monterey, and there was... I don't know why, but outside of a hotel, there were just three Lamborghinis, like, just kind of splayed in, like, a triad or whatever.
Wow.
And there was just people...
Maybe it was the triad.
...walking up there and, like, looking at them and, like, taking pictures and stuff. Like, there was probably millions of dollars of cars there.
Yes.
Like, it was crazy. And so people were just obsessed with it because they looked so cool and they knew, like, how powerful they were and stuff.
Yeah. Do you think there's an issue, though, in that because we never actually have driven a real, you know, Lamborghini or Ferrari...
Yeah. Right.
That who knows whether or not it's actually true to the act of driving.
I mean, I think that's where it ties back to our simulation conversation, because who knows, like, is it, is, like, flying a Harrier or whatever in a flight sim?
It's 100%. Like, as a Harrier flyer.
Yeah, I mean, like, I guess theoretically you could verify that with you know, some Air Force pilot that actually
it
has done it.
Somebody.
And I think the thing is that, you know, like a horse-drawn carriage or a coal-powered locomotive or something, like, those things will never truly be gone. Like, there will always be, you know, for the sake of preservation, there will always be some sort of combustion engine somewhere on the planet.
Yeah.
Even if it's only, like, in some rich person's, like, you know, Jay Leno will still have all of his cars, you know? Like, I mean, like, there will always be somebody who has that hands-on thing, so you'll have to put your faith in the experts that they've been consulted, kind of. Which is already what we do with Gran Turismo.
I already put my faith in Jay Leno, so...
I mean, I think... So, that side of it, I thought, was very interesting, that this is a way that you can preserve something that existed at the time of the advent of the art form, but the art form is now starting to outlast in a way that most of the people interacting with the art form, much the same way as it is with movies, we can interact with it in a way that we'll never be able to interact with the real thing. And it's still able to kind of carry that on.
Yeah, I think that's fascinating. Yeah. One thing that I would add, though, and this is something that you don't see, partially because the goal of these is to recreate the experience of driving,
mm-hmm.
not recreate the experience of loving everything around driving.
Yeah.
So this isn't even to speak at all of how do you preserve the culture of cars.
Yeah.
You know, what...
Oh, I wanted to talk about that, too. I think that's the major... I mean... That even gets, like, brought up in the article. Like, Corey brings that up, but then we don't get to go into it, basically.
Well, and then, I guess then, directly related to the culture of driving, right? Mm-hmm. There's so much of the act of being in love with the car that involves the maintenance of the car. Repairing the car, touching the car, physically touching the car.
Yeah, it's the mechanical.
Yeah, so I think the question, whenever somebody is thinking about how do we archive our reality now in the digital space... You know, how far do they have to branch out to really capture it, right? Like, you know, do you want to model changing your oil in a game that you have at an automotive history museum? Because honestly, I think you probably should.
Yeah.
What about the sound
of the click when you turn on the indicator?
Or rotating your tires or, you know, buying a different stereo option. I don't know.
Right.
Like, there's all sorts of different things. Modding your car, right?
Or getting bilked by any of the untrustworthy mechanics in
town. Yeah. or not only that, but what about the subcultures of cars, right? Like, there are groups of people who all they do is try to get the sound of their car to be as loud in decibels as humanly possible.
Yeah.
It's not even, they can't even drive anymore. I mean, the cars are literally not built to drive.
Yeah, yeah.
They literally remove the engine so they can make a car as loud as they possibly can.
Those are the
can.
Ones that have, if I'm thinking of the same thing, they basically have like a wall of speakers on the back.
Yes, it's all speakers in car form. Like it is, they are trying to embody sound. But what's so interesting to me is, this is a subculture of car aficionados because they're trying to augment what a car can do and push it to such an extreme, but they're never saying, I don't want to have this be in the shape of a car anymore. Yeah. I mean, this is not that different than, say, purebred dog breeding. Mm-hmm. You know, like what they're trying to create.
The most extreme example of something.
Yeah, they're trying to make a pug, like this disgusting excuse for an animal that can barely, you know, survive.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to create, and it's for the love of of the features, this particular feature of the car.
Yeah, I think we may have kind of inadvertently answered our own question about simulations from a few weeks ago. Like, this is why people want every dial active on the Harrier jet.
Yes.
You know, if you really wanted to, you know, Gran Turismo is really good at archiving the kind of romanticism of like the art form of a car. Like, these are what the lines look like. This is what it sounds like when the engine is revving.
This is your kid spilling Cheetos all over the back seat. You just had that done.
But like if you wanted to get more extreme, you'd have to, like you were saying, you'd have to go into like the sim territory of like, okay, let's pop the hood.
Yeah.
This is every nut and bolt that holds the thing together.
Mm-hmm.
Like this is the upholstery. You know, like this is like you're playing a game where you don't even turn the car on. Like this, and I think you know the more recent Gran Turismos did that. I think maybe Gran Turismo 6. I know the most recent Forzas did that. Like there's like this great Xbox One like fully lushly rendered car, and you're just like kind of, it's like slow panning like pornographically over the car, and it's like it's just there to look at the details of the cars.
Yeah,
but like it's not there to actually systemically interact with the car.
Yeah.
You know, like you're not really like removing certain parts of the car, taking a look at what it looks like.
And I think, again, this is partly where games and shine, and where I think the biggest hope for the role of video games in museums is, and that is the ability to capture in time design. Like it's a moment of design.
Yeah.
Yes, you can drive the car. You could even sit in one of those really shitty mockeries of a car seat and put on headphones and have your seat shake, you know, like you're at some crazy, you know, Disneyland ride or something like that to create the illusion of you being in the car seat.
Yeah.
But where I think it really excels is just in the ability to create that object and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's another one of those look, don't touch things, which is sort of what museums do anyway.
But I mean, I think the promise is that we're getting to a point where the physical immersion with something like VR.
Virtual reality. Yeah.
And I think
Corey mentions that in the article as well.
I think that's really smart. And I think because like you'll never know what it actually, like if you've ever been in something even approaching a sports car, like you're really low to the ground. You're like shockingly low to the ground. And like that's hard to capture even if you're looking at a screen.
That's a good point.
I think that the VR has a big role to play there. But I also think like as we get more and more sophisticated, like our machines are always going to get more and more sophisticated, so you'll be able to actually physically model and render things in a way that's more sophisticated than, like, you know, if you look at the first Gran Turismo, like, it's impressive for the time, but it's like a PlayStation game.
Well, one of the reasons I like this idea so much, too, is how much space it saves for museum. You know, like, it sounds kind of weird, but you know, there's the history of cars is enormous.
Yeah.
But in a digital space, you can go from one car to the other in real time. Mm-hmm. Like you could be driving a car and suddenly it says, you know, 5 years later, they changed the chassis to give you a greater view of, you know, behind your rear window. And all of a sudden, the rear window changes and shifts. Yeah. And now you're driving a car that's the same car technically, but slightly different chassis.
Mm-hmm.
Like that
it's
minutia. That minutia of history that you could tell in a digital space is actually incredibly empowering.
Mm.
Like, it's another one of those things where I don't really envy museum curators of the future who are trying to put together an exhibit in the digital space because there's so much there.
Yeah.
But your options are just so plentiful. Like, you can really shape a experience through history in a way that you can't really do right now if you were to just take people around to a automotive museum and let them look at, you know, a 1962 whatever.
Yeah, agreed. I think one thing that I wanted to go deeper into that the article touches on, but doesn't really have the space to go into it, which is like the cultural stuff around cars. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's like a whole book onto itself. Many books onto itself. But I mean, Corey brings some of the stuff up where he talks about, like, you know, the idea of, you know, what does a car mean for someone's identity, or like kind of the making of a modern teenager in the '50s, you know, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And I think that's something where Gran Turismo actually does kind of a bad job. Like, yeah. I mean, like, the cars are so sanitized that they don't even have humans in them, you know, like, let alone like the, how humans felt about cars. Yeah. And I actually think that's probably, from like an archival perspective, probably the hardest thing for something like Gran Turismo to do, because it's not a narrative driven game.
Yeah.
You know, like, you actually need a story driven game about cars.
And you could. You could have that, right? I mean, you could have, you know, it's a dating sim, right? Mm-hmm. It's a super detailed car, like an amazingly detailed car, but the whole sim is really to impress upon you what a car means in the 60s when you are a 17-year-old boy, you know, or what a car means differently if you are growing up in the 50s and you're a woman and you're, you know, you're not only allowed to drive, but maybe you're discouraged to drive. Yeah. Right? There's all sorts of different little historical moments around the car, right? Mm-hmm. Or it could even be, you know, you're a designer of modern America. I mean, this is to some extent what SimCity does, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you look at the grid of SimCity, and for the most part, those are still defined by the car in the way that the modern city in this world is so defined, as certainly in the United States.
Yeah.
All of our major cities are defined by the vehicle. It's a fundamental part of what it means to be American, I would argue, is that this history with the car, it didn't have to be that way. It could have been any sorts of number of ways, but we could model what it was like in the 50s to be, or the 40s or whatever, to be an architect or a city planner, you know?
I mean, if you're creating a newer city, a newish city on the West Coast or something, you don't have to deal with all the crap that, like, Boston has to deal with, like, trying to, like, retrofit
streets
your
that
city
go diagonally and stuff. Exactly. Yeah.
Or if you're like San Francisco and your city burns down every 50 years, you can, like, redo it. Like,
Which, by the way, I think we're about due.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was, that sort of thing is way tougher, and I think it's something people don't. You know, it's something that's harder. Like, you have to start looking at games, like, you know, really kind of like at a tilted sort of view, like, I don't know, Full Throttle or something about motorcycle culture.
Yeah.
Or maybe GTA for, like, you know, what does it mean? Like, what is car culture? Like, what is, does it say something about kind of the more dangerous or disposable mentality that you're just kind of going in and out of cars all the time? Like, it's just...
That's a really, I totally agree. I mean, that's the interesting thing is we can also imagine an exhibit about the history of racing games or cars in games.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, that's just a different can of worms, but the point is valid, right? Yeah. I think you can learn a lot about what role cars have in certain games in certain time periods.
Yeah.
You know, GTA 5 today versus maybe the first GTA.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I haven't taken a close look at that, but I could see some really interesting, you know, stuff coming out of that.
Yeah.
Even the idea of certain cars and how they are, you know, marketed or created, like the car, what is the car in Mario Kart 8?
Oh, the
Mercedes?
Yeah, Mercedes has several cars in Mario
Kart 8. So, like, the Mercedes in Mario Kart 8, right? Or the PT Cruiser in whatever, Gran Turismo, or there's some, I remember an old racing game when the PT Cruiser came out. It was on the cover because there was some sort of marketing deal.
PT Cruiser had the best marketing campaign ever.
Oh, and they're hideous cars. and like, I think people who genuinely enjoy cars still laugh at the idea of a PT Cruiser. But the point being is, like, for a moment, it was in our popular consciousness because of a really excellent marketing campaign.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about cars in Gran Turismo, obviously, but are there any video games, not car related, but anything that takes technology or that reminds you of a certain, you know, a certain piece of history or technology that is more kind of archival now?
That's a really good question.
Yeah. I have a couple.
Okay, well, you start. Yeah. So you start, and then I'll take over.
One is Digital, A Love Story, where you are doing a lot of, like,
Christine Love.
Yeah, Christine Love's first big game, first, you know, well-known game, where you're dealing with, like, a message board, basically, because message boards, I mean, they still exist and forums still exist, clearly, but they don't exist in the same, like, dial-up bulletin board system way that they existed in the early 1990s.
Yeah.
And, like, so, but you could still do it, like, just, like, in the year 2100, we'll still have, you know, classic cars,
mm-hmm.
but you won't buy one. Like, sure. You know, we log onto the internet every day, but we don't go to bulletin board systems. We theoretically could, I guess, but like, that's something that is fallen out of my everyday experience, but kind of archives it in a way that's faithful to how I remember it.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
One I would put up would be Duck Hunt. or really any of the hunting games. Like, right. In honesty, I grew up in a family where hunting wasn't like a thing that, it wasn't like the, oh, hey guys, let's go, it's hunting season. Like, that wasn't us, mm-hmm. but it was a part of everyday life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we would shoot a deer if deer were on the property, or rabbits, or quail, or whatever.
Would your dogs fucking mock you when you missed?
Our dogs were vicious. They could, like, take down a deer hunting themselves. Dogs. Yeah, it was insane. Yeah. Anyway, not mm-hmm. to get into the gory details, but the point being is, like, hunting isn't something that I do. It's fallen out of favor amongst quite a few people. It's still practiced, but not a lot of people really know what it's like to go on a hunting trip.
Not a lot of people where we live.
Yeah, that's true. Certainly, yeah.
Once you get outside rural
areas,
or just like anywhere else in the country, basically.
Yes.
Like,
The point being is, in our circles, that's something that it's difficult to capture. But you could say the same thing for, you know, big buck hunter, right?
Yeah.
Like, how many, you can't really hunt an elephant anymore, but you can load up a game and hunt an elephant.
Yeah. But that falls...
Far Cry 4.
That falls back into the same problem of Gran Turismo, where, like, hunting an elephant is more than just pointing a gun at an elephant and shooting it.
That's true.
It's like, what is the culture? Why do you hunt an elephant? You hunt it because you want that trophy. Like, you want to assert dominance over one of the biggest land animals that has ever walked mm-hmm. the earth, you know? So it's like... It's something that you miss out on the cultural connotation of why this even exists in the first place.
Yeah.
But you do get at least a sense, even if it's an arcadey, cartoony sense, of what the physical action is.
Yeah.
You know, why would you do that? What does it feel like?
Yeah, So what's your other?
I think these are all kind of like digital-related type stuff, because I think that our... I think video games are definitely like self-referential.
Yeah.
But I mean, you have things like I was just playing the South Park game this year, and at a certain point, the South Park game turns into like an 8-bit Final Fantasy game. And it's like, this is all part of the whole like kind of retro aesthetic that mm-hmm. is doing this. Like, you can't, it's getting harder and harder to like just go out and buy a game that looks like that is not trying to make some sort of commentary on it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was played in South Park. It was played in such a way that was straight laced enough that it felt shockingly like playing the original Final Fantasies.
Yeah.
Just the way you'd move, the way that the enemies would move, and you know, the way that the like the Gran Turismo example, the way that the kind of aesthetic sense of what that was. I think video games in general do that stuff pretty well.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it addresses the cultural side of it or just the view side of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's, again, it's probably a tougher challenge, but I think all that stuff.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I have one, and this is actually a bit more broad, but there's actually quite a few board games that do really cool stuff with this. And that's partially because what they're
like
trying...
Like the sound effects and stuff? Or like
Not sound effects, but more so like trying to recreate the systems or the maybe the way that you might feel in the given scenario. So, for example, I've written a little bit about... this game called A Few Acres of Snow. It's a game about the French Indian War, and while it doesn't really recreate what it's like to be a British soldier or an Indian soldier or a French soldier or whatever, what it does do is it just give you a pretty good sense of the way that it became a really intractable physical conflict right in that time period. Or, you know, there's a few board games that try to simulate slavery in one way or another. I forget the name, but there's this really good board game that and again, this is partially a little bit biased because all games and all simulations are right, and depending on how you actually see how things went down, but it does a pretty good job of creating the rhetoric of the economic reasons behind the abolishment of slavery, because as more and more people start using slaves and it starts to become this crucial component of your economy in the game as you play, you all of a sudden have an incentive to support abolitionism because you realize, hey, actually all these people are benefiting from this that I'm not.
Yeah.
I can sort of screw them over economically. Maybe I should sort of start promoting this. And again, like that's not really what this article is talking about, because this is the physical act of being in the car, but there's something about...
But that addresses the cultural side.
It does. It addresses the cultural side, and it addresses some of the logic behind it, right? Like, I think that's really difficult to capture. When we're talking about car, we're talking about loving a car, and it's a little bit harder to even find the rational aspect of an adoration of design. Yeah. But there's a lot of historical moments that we're trying to capture the actual logic that went into something. Like, how did people think? Yeah. And why did they think that? And games are especially good at creating some of that.
Yeah. What do you... what type of object or feeling do you think will have to just completely rely on like, an interactive experience like a video game to simulate? Driving a car, like maybe someone, you know, 50 or 100 years from now, they might never drive a car, or they might not even ever be in a car with an actual gas-powered engine, you know, but it just seems actually more and more realistic as times go on.
Eating real food.
eating something that's not nutrient-rich paste.
Yeah.
I think something like...
Not loving Big Brother.
Oh, man. I think that... Something like Gone Home is actually a good step towards that.
Gone Home's a great example.
Because like Gone Home
simulates
the 1990s, basically, where it's like you don't have a cell phone, you have to walk around, listen to tapes.
Pacific Northwest 90s.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think that there will be certain things that the few generations after us, even now, like, kids don't know what a rotary phone is. Like, you will only be able to, like,
oh, man, I remember having a rotary phone.
Yeah, I mean, like, and people will say the same thing, but, oh, I remember when we were in, like, a bus powered by a diesel engine. Like, that was weird, you know, and people just won't have that sense anymore.
No seatbelts, you know? Drunk driver at the wheel, yelling at the kids.
Strange liquids on the floor. Oh, that'll be the same, actually.
This is a related question, but is there anything that is happening now that you would want to see digitally recreated in a museum one day? Like, things that you feel like you'd really want to capture now because it might go away.
I mean, they already took the best example, which is cars. Like, I think, I don't know. It's harder and harder to make the argument for fossil fuel burning vehicles.
Yeah.
And I feel like we'll look back on that and think that we're pretty silly to like be having to base our economy around these things. I can't think of another one that
One that I've thought of, and one of the reasons I like this conversation a lot is because I feel like it really lends itself well to exploring architecture. So, you know, if you want, say for example, they decide we're going to change the Getty Museum, or we're going to change even downtown San Francisco. There's going to be a huge...
San Francisco is burned down again.
Yeah, San Francisco is burned down again. Like, we use that to model space.
Yeah.
One of the things that I would be really interested in is modeling Disneyland. Something that is already a simulacrum and a weird one at that of all of these entertainment properties. And Disneyland, by definition, changes all the time because a new Avengers movie comes out and all of a sudden we need a new ride. Like,
They'll add another land over there.
I mean, the idea of capturing a moment in time, the physical manifestation of entertainment culture in a specific time and place is fascinating to me. Like, if I could wander around and experience Disneyland of the 1950s, you know, that would be fascinating to me.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's why we like games like BioShock so much, because BioShock almost kind of does that in a weird way. And also Andrew Ryan is a lot like Walt Disney in a lot of scary ways. But, like, you know, it's almost a simulation of a simulated thing.
Yes.
You
know? Yeah. Yeah. And one more that I think that it would benefit if we talk about it, because I feel somebody's going to mention it.
Yeah.
And that is just simulating nature. Like, it's a rare opportunity now, even for people who, like you and I, who live in a relatively major city, to find time to go outside, let alone go outside where there's literally no one around. You know, in a couple days, I think actually today, this game called The Long Dark comes out, and it's just about being trapped in the wilderness.
Yeah.
Or we have Firewatch by the Campo Santo folk, who are creating a sort of wilderness out there. It is a very rare experience for people to be genuinely lost out there in the wild, or even not to be lost, but really find themselves solitary and alone.
Yeah.
I mean, I think right now, there's a huge number of people who haven't been genuinely alone, maybe ever, in their life.
Yeah.
That idea of being able to simulate that is pretty cool. And it's something that people are actually genuinely doing right now.
That is cool.
I mean, something even like...
Which is ironic because they're doing it with the most advanced computer simulation possible. But,
you know, we genuinely do have some threats to nature. There are aspects of nature. You know, California's in a water crisis. Yeah. Who knows what the landscape will look like in 50 years?
Yeah.
There are people who will be genuinely curious, what does that look like? You know, what does a redwood forest look like? What does it look like to wander, you know, some of the shrines and forests outside of Tokyo?
Yeah.
You know, like, there's all sorts of interesting natural landscapes that also have some blend with human society and impact.
Yeah.
That not only is it difficult for us to see now, even though they're very much real, but could be, you know, gone or disappearing in 20, 30, 50 years.
That's cool. Well, we'll leave it there. I'd be interested to see what people have to say about this. Experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address if you want to reach out.
And experiencepoints.net is our website. You can find more of our stuff on iTunes and Stitcher. Go ahead and leave us a review. Big shout out to everybody who has left us a review, by the way. We always really appreciate it. All of them
comments,
are
emails. We've been getting a lot of those recently, so we like them.
Absolutely. Yeah. Send them our way.
You think they'll ever simulate my mom's 1985 Plymouth Colt Vista station wagon?
As long as they don't simulate your mom's cooking.
Hey now!
Dad joke.
In any case, thanks so much for listening, everyone. We'll be talking to you next week.
Bye-bye. You're lucky. My other option was right after I say the date, it was going to be. Get me out.